tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Today we are continuing our series, Kill the Jerk. If you missed last week, you can check it out on the replay located on our Facebook page, or you can subscribe and listen to our podcast at nextlevelchurch.net. You can also find it on iTunes. Last week's big idea was, if you want to see your true self, look at how you treat the people closest to you. If you want to see your true self, look at how you treat the people closest to you. It is harder to love the people closest to you. It is harder because of the way that our brains are wired. You see, when a relationship is new, something in our brain says, I like this, I want this, I need this, I'm afraid that this new thing will reject me. And because of that fear, as human beings, we become on our best behavior. That is, we give our best. We hide some of our flaws. We do what we think the other person needs in order for them to like us. We put in our best effort. And we do this in everything. We do this in jobs. We do this with friendship. We do this in dating, and we do this in marriage. And this is what psychology calls the honeymoon effect. The honeymoon effect is a real thing. It is something in our brains that happens that triggers that at first we were on our best behavior. The reason, though, at some point the honeymoon phase ends is because our brains start to become familiar with the person. They're no longer new. There's no longer the same amount of excitement. We no longer fear that the person is going to leave us. And as soon as that fear disappears, we exit out of the honeymoon and our true self comes out. We see the honeymoon effect in jobs. We learned that on average, an employee gives his absolute or her absolute best for a job for the first 2 years. Sometime within the first 2 years, that switch in their brain goes and they go from trying to win people over, trying to please people over, to saying, I feel secure in this. I'm no longer afraid of getting fired. And unless there is some external motivation, that is a raise or some type of praise or a disciplinary action, on our own, we will start to slack the more familiar we get with a job. How messed up is that? We see this in dating relationships. When the relationship starts, both people put on their best effort. They do everything they can to win the other person over. But as soon as they're no longer afraid that the relationship is going to end, we start to take the other person for granted. I've seen this with people who are adamantly opposed to talking on the telephone. They hate it. They cannot stand to talk on the telephone. But yet in the dating phase, they talked for hours. A few short years later, same person, they don't want to talk on the telephone to anyone. Why? It's because we put on our best effort at the beginning, and then once we become comfortable with someone, we start to take them for granted. This isn't just something that happens with adults or with teenagers. It's actually wired in human beings, and you can see it in a lot of children. Maybe if you're a parent, you've experienced this. Have you ever had a teacher or maybe a babysitter say of your kids, oh, they're just so well behaved. You have such good kids. And when they say that to you, you think, really? My kids? Are you sure that something didn't go wrong? Like, they didn't whine and complain about the dinner that you prepared. They didn't whine and complain about everything. You didn't see their temper tantrum. They didn't overreact to you. Like, when I'm with the kids, I get to see their worst. What do you mean I have such good kids? Have you ever had those type of thoughts? It's because it is hardwired in human beings that we want to feel accepted. We want to feel needed. We want to feel loved. And because of that, we put our best efforts first. But as soon as we feel comfortable with someone, as soon as we lose the fear that they're going to leave us, we start to take them for granted. This is why, have you ever had someone pass away? And after they've passed away, you thought to yourself, I just wish that I had more time. The truth is that you had time. We don't prioritize the time because in our minds we think, I have forever to hang out with them. I have forever to hang out with those friends. I have forever to hang out with my parents. I have forever to hang out to do this job. I have forever. We think that we have forever, and when it's stripped away from us, we have regrets because we say, oh, I wish I would have spent more time. I wish I would have prioritized it. Well, why do we take people for granted while they're living? It's because of the honeymoon effect, the honeymoon phase. We naturally, by nature, the more comfortable we get with someone, the more that we take them for granted. And when the honeymoon phase ends, this is when husbands stop listening to their wives. It's when wives start to nag their husbands because they don't listen. This is when friends start to neglect the relationship and not prioritize one another and not see one another. This is when people start to slack on the job. It's when people start to be rude to their family members. When the honeymoon phase ends, the worst parts of us come out because we're no longer afraid that we're going to get rejected. We do this same thing with church. With church, it's very easy. Once we get comfortable with it, and once we think to ourselves, church will always be there, we start to neglect it. We do the same thing with God. The reason that we don't prioritize our prayer life and Bible reading is because we think, oh, I have forever to do that, or I'll be in eternity to do that. We think we have a long amount of time, and so we take it for granted. And it's not until one of these things is stripped away or taken away from us when we realize, man, I wish I wouldn't have held on to that so casually. I wish I would have prioritized it more. So the people that are closest to you, they are by nature going to get the worst of you. And that is, the people that are closest to you are opportunities for you to practice your faith in Jesus. You get to practice having patience with the people closest to you. You get to practice kindness with the people closest to you. You get to practice gentleness with the people closest to you. You get to practice long-suffering with the people closest to you. These are godly traits for Christians to have, and they do not come naturally. We have to practice them. We cannot change the world and love other people when we don't even know how to love those that are closest to us. And that is the inner jerk. The inner jerk is something that all of us have, every single one of us. All of us have a selfish side. All of us have a side inside of us that comes out. And it's not a good side. It's not a side that we may like, but it is by nature. It is something that is inside every single human being. We are all, every single one of us, is broken. And that inner jerk does not go away easily. That's why I've called this kill the jerk. Now, I know the word kill is a brutal word, and I chose it intentionally. Jesus, when he was on the earth physically, he said to his closest followers that if you want to follow after me, you are to deny yourself, take up your cross, and die. Now, he wasn't meaning literally that we are to die. What he was saying is that figuratively, that you have so much selfishness in you, you are going to want to serve yourself over him, you're going to want to serve yourself over God, that the only way to do it is to crucify yourself, to figuratively crucify, to die to yourself. The crucifixion was the most brutal way to execute another human being. So Jesus used a strong word. And sometimes it takes strong words to grab our attention. And I want you to know that you can have healthy relationships. You can have an amazing marriage. You can have a great relationship with your kids. You can even work on a broken relationship and help make it become better. You can have great friendships. You can. You can learn to become rich in relationships. But in order for that to happen, you've got to kill the jerk. You can't just passively hope that it goes away. You can't just wish it away. You can't say, oh, I'll get to it one day. You've got to intentionally, every day, crucify and kill the inner jerk. And today, I want to talk to you about something that will pull out your inner jerk. It pulls out my inner jerk. It is something that causes all of us to reveal the jerk within. It's like flies to sugar. It's like white girls to pumpkin spice. It's like every dad saying, well, I guess it's free then, when the cashier has a hard time ringing up an item. You know what I'm saying, dads? We have to say it. We just cannot resist saying that when the cashier says, I can't ring this up, or there's no price tag. We say, I guess it's free then. All of us do that. I'm telling you, it's is impossible. It is difficult to resist. All of us have an inner jerk. And if you want to see your inner jerk, watch what happens when you don't get your way. In fact, that's our big idea for today. The big idea is your inner jerk is revealed when you don't get your way. Your inner jerk is revealed when you don't get your way. I want you to think about it just for a second. When you want something and you can't have it, how do you respond? When you want something and someone else stands in your way, how do you view them? How do you think about them? When there's something going on and you have an opinion and someone disagrees with that opinion, how do you respond? What's your reaction? When you don't get the recognition that you think you deserve, what's your reaction? When someone doesn't meet your expectations, what's your reaction? How you respond to not getting your way reveals your inner jerk. Psychologist Jack Brehm introduced reactance theory in 1966. The reactance theory occurs when a person feels that someone or something is taking away their choices or limiting their range of alternatives. So all of us experience this. When we feel like we are forced to do something, our motivation plummets and our attitude rises. I saw this just this past weekend with my kids. We gave my kids some limited screen time to play on their tablets. And when they had about 5 minutes left, I said, "Hey guys, you have 5 minutes left. When it's done, let's play a game together." And I went downstairs and I set up a brand new game that we hadn't played yet. And I pulled out all the pieces and started reading over the instructions. And my kids come down the stairs 5 minutes later. And right when I start explaining the game, both of my kids huff. And like I can just see that they're acting angry. They're acting mad. They're acting like I'm forcing them to watch Lawrence Welk. Did you have to grow up watching Lawrence Welk? It was torture. Like I was trying to play a board game with my kids. My kids don't know what pain and suffering is. And so I'm trying to explain this game to them, and they just have an attitude, and they're like, "It's confusing. I don't get it." And I said, "Hey guys, you need to find your happy heart. Take a deep breath. We will figure out how to play this game." And at that point, my son says, "But I don't want to play a game." And that was the heart of it. He felt like he was forced to quit being on his tablet, and he was forced to play a game. And in that moment, it didn't matter that his dad was trying to do something nice, that his dad wanted to spend time with him. He reacted. He reacted because he did not get his way. And it's not just kids. It's teenagers. It's young adults. It's adults. We all have this inside of us. That is our inner jerk. When we don't get our way, we react. Have you ever agreed to do something like help someone move, and then on the day of, you regret that decision? Why? Because you feel forced to do it. There's something else you'd rather do, and you're like, "Man, I wish I wouldn't have signed up for that." That is the reactance theory. It's saying, I no longer feel like I have freedom. I'm not choosing to do this. I feel like I have to do it. And whenever you feel like you have to do it, whenever you don't get your way, whenever you feel like you're forced out of a freedom, that's when the inner jerk comes out. And when the inner jerk comes out, he is not rational. Today, I want to show you what you can do about it, and it's through the scriptures. The scriptures have a lot to say about this, but I want to look at specifically a text that deals with how one of Jesus' followers reacted poorly. And I think in this, we're going to learn something on how we can deal with our own inner jerk. I want to read to you the theme verse for today. And I want to invite you to read along. It's going to come up on the screen. And it's Matthew 26, 14 through 16. And when we get to the reference, we're going to have a little bit of fun. We're going to say dot, dot. Now understand, you don't have to do this. I don't want you to react poorly and buck on this and fight this. No one's going to force you to do the dot, dot. It is a choice that you get to. You don't have to. You get to do the dot, dot. It's a lot of fun. I want to invite you to do it with me. So read it wherever you're watching this. Read it nice and loud. Matthew 26, 14 through 16 says, "Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, 'What are you willing to give me if I deliver him over to you?' So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over." Matthew 26, dot, dot, 14 through 16. Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. God, we come before you, and there is so much unrest and uneasiness and anxiety and worry and real issues in our world. And God, we want to change the world, But the truth is, we can't change anything until you've changed us. So we ask that we would not miss this moment. We ask that you would change our hearts. Give us the wisdom to know what's right and the courage to do it, even when we're afraid. And God, I ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. So I want to give you a little bit of context at what we're going to be reading. If you grew up in the church, you might be familiar with this text. What we're going to read comes at the very end of Jesus' ministry. He has started to tell his disciples on multiple occasions that he is going to have to suffer and die, but that he's going to rise again. He's put that in the water. He's communicated that to them. They still aren't getting it, but he is getting ready for all of this to happen. And on one of the last nights of his life, he is sitting at a dinner table, inclined with his disciples, and as they're eating, a woman comes in, and she pours some expensive perfume out of a jar. And she pours the perfume on his head and on his feet, and she starts to clean his feet with her own hair. It was an amazing act of worship. But I want to show you in the text that not everyone was excited about this act of worship. In Matthew 26, 8 through 9, the text says, when the disciples saw this, they were indignant. They were angry. They were frustrated. They were upset. Why this waste, they asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Now, that sounds like a very righteous thing, because we see all throughout the scriptures that Jesus has a heart for the poor, and he commands Christians to care for the poor and love the poor and to take care of the needs of the poor. So this sounds like a very righteous thing. Like, why would that woman waste that perfume on you? We could have done something good with that money. We could have given it to the poor. But Jesus sees something. He sees the real heart behind this. And I want to show you how Jesus responds. In Matthew 26, 10 through 13, aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." So the disciples are angry. They say, "Why did you waste that money?" And Jesus responds by saying, "Hey guys, let me grab your attention. Matthew and John, take out your pens, write this down, because what you just experienced is going to be told in the gospels. It's going to be told in the story of me for the rest of eternity. Make sure you take note of this, that she is preparing me for burial." Now, that was Matthew's take on it, and that's the one that I'm really familiar with. I've read through the whole New Testament multiple times, but one of the things I love about reading it multiple times is that I often catch things that I'd never caught before. And recently, I was reading through John's account of this exact same story, and John gives us some insight that Matthew does not. Look at what John says in John 12, 4 through 6. "But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected." What did he object to? He objected to pouring the perfume on Jesus. Judas says, "Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages." He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As a keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. So did you catch the specifics that John gave? Matthew says it was the disciples that were indignant, but John, he straight out calls out Judas. He says, no, it wasn't the rest of the disciples. It was Judas Iscariot. Now, I don't know if you're skeptical of the scriptures. I don't know if you're an analytical type, but you might be wondering, why is there this discrepancy? Why is there a difference? And the truth is, I don't know. I do not think that these things stand in contrast to one another. Judas was a disciple, so therefore the disciples did say this. And I don't know why Matthew didn't call out Judas, and I don't know why John did call out Judas. Maybe it's because Matthew is more of the grace type, and he's afraid of hurting someone's feelings or calling someone out. And maybe John is more of the truth type, and he's just a straight shooter. Like, I don't know, but I can relate to it, because there are certain times where I call out certain behaviors, and there's other times when I'm more general. When we first started this whole online church thing, my whole family was sitting down in the living room. We prioritized and we watched church on Sundays, and we were watching the service, and my kids were sitting between my wife and I, and we were watching the service, and as I looked over and I saw that my wife was on her cell phone. Now, my wife is an amazing multitasker. She's incredibly gifted at it. She can do two things at once and do them both well. I'm very impressed with her ability to do that. And so I don't know what she was doing on her phone, but I looked and I noticed that my son wasn't paying attention to the service. What he was doing was looking at whatever was on her phone. So I wanted to have a conversation about this. And so after everyone left and it was just my wife and I said to her, "Hey, when we are watching the service, I feel like we need to prioritize the service and that we should put our phones away." There's no "we" in this. I didn't have my phone out. But I was generalizing. I was trying to soften the blow. Maybe that's what Matthew's doing. I don't know. But some of you are truth tellers and you're like, "Hey, I'm not gonna skirt around this. I'm gonna say what it is. This is an issue. Judas, you're the one that did it. I'm not taking the rap for this. You're the one that called this out, and you're the one that Jesus rebuked." So now that we know that it was Judas who Jesus called out, I want to go back to Matthew. Because right after Jesus calls out the disciple, the very next thing, look at what the text says in Matthew 26, 14 through 60. "Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, 'What are you willing to give me if I deliver him over to you?' So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over." So did you catch what happened? The text says "then," which implies immediately after this. After Judas didn't get his way, after Judas was called out, after Judas was offended, immediately then, he looked for a way to betray Jesus. That's what offense does. That's what not getting our way does. Whenever there is a disagreement, there is a divide. And we have to choose how we're going to bridge that gap. Are we going to bridge the gap with hate? Are we going to bridge the gap with insults? Are we going to bridge the gap with arguing? Or are we going to bridge the gap with love? You need to know that whenever there is a disagreement, whenever you do not get your way, you will be tempted to crucify the other person. Judas was so upset, so frustrated, that he went and he looked for a way to betray Jesus. Not getting our way, it makes us write checks that we regret cashing. And I want you to know that in your relationships, your greatest regrets come because you didn't get your way, or a need wasn't being met, or you didn't get what you thought you deserved. And instead of responding in a rational way, you reacted. So what can we learn from this? We can learn that all of us have an inner jerk. And we can learn that we shouldn't cast stones at the Judases of the world, because we've all done the exact same thing. Have you ever ended a relationship because you disagreed with someone? Have you ever blocked someone on social media? Have you ever got mad and angry and done something that you regretted? We all have. We're human. Here's a simple way that we do this. When you get your way, when someone gives you what you want, do you naturally want to respond with, "I love you"? When we get our way, we are naturally drawn to someone else. "Oh, thank you so much. I love you. You're the best." But what happens when you don't get your way? When you haven't gotten your way, have you ever said the words, "I hate you"? Even if it's in a joking way, even if it's supposed to be light at heart, when you haven't gotten your way, did you respond, "Oh, I hate you. I can't stand you. I can't believe you did that"? Do you see, when you don't get your way, the inner jerk comes out, and you can mask it with humor all you want, but the truth is our words reflect the condition of our heart. And Judas betrayed Jesus because he didn't get his way. He was offended. He was upset. And the truth is that you are going to respond poorly when you don't get your way, unless you treat others the way that you want to be treated, not how you're feeling. If you want healthy relationships, then you have to learn how to die to yourself. We have to learn to treat people the way that Jesus has treated us. We have to learn to die to ourselves and give up what we want in order for the greater good. We have to learn to fight for our relationships instead of in our relationships. So just because someone does something wrong to you does not mean that you have the right then to respond by doing something wrong to them. As a Christian, you are called to a higher standard. And let me just tell you that what I'm seeing so often in our culture today is that people are responding, I don't get my way, therefore the other people are evil. Therefore, the other people need to die. Therefore, the other people, you've hurt me, I'm going to hurt you worse. And at some point, someone has to set an example. And I believe that Jesus has saved us in order for Christians to model to the world, what does it mean to truly love someone? To love someone even when they don't love you. That's what we're called to do as Christians. So what can we do about this? What is a practical thing that we can do? Well, when you don't get your way, when your inner jerk comes out, I want you to remember to try. Try. It's an acronym. And the acronym TRY stands for T, take a moment. When you don't get your way, take a moment. You've got to pause. Don't respond. Do not respond in your anger. Take a moment. I'm frustrated, I'm angry, I don't want to say something I'm going to regret. I don't want to send this email in anger. I don't want to send this Facebook post in anger. I don't want to say these words to someone in anger. Let me take a moment. Let me pause. Try. Take a moment. R, remember why you love this person. Whenever there's a disagreement, there's a divide. And so you've got to choose, am I going to build this bridge over to them? And in order to build the bridge, you've got to hold on to and remember, why do I love this person to begin with? We have more in common than we have differences. So I got to hold on to that. I love this person because, list it out, say it out loud, say it to them. Hey, I love you so much. I love you because of this. Take a moment. Remember why you love this person. And then why, you can decide how you want to respond. After you take a moment, after you remember why you love this person, then you get to choose. Am I going to react? Am I going to react in anger? Am I going to react in the flesh? Am I going to react out of hatred? Or am I going to respond in love? You can respond and even say, what you did hurt me. What you did was wrong. But I'm not going to allow your wrong to cause me to do something I'm going to regret. Now, here's the truth. We're all humans. All of us are humans. All of us are going to forget this. All of us are going to make mistakes. No one has perfect relationships. But here's what I want you to know. When you mess up, even if the other person was wrong, when you mess up and you respond and you react poorly, you need to be the bigger person and apologize. When someone hurts you and you react in a negative way, don't justify it. Don't say, you know, I'm sorry, but you did this. No. If you've done something wrong, even if the other person was wrong, you've got to own your piece of the pie and you've got to apologize. Don't justify it. Don't beat yourself up over and over again. But in order to move on, you've got to own it. If you're familiar with the scriptures, you know what happened to Judas. Judas was so guilty from what he did that he ended up taking his own life. And that is the wrong way to handle this. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to not get your way and react poorly. The proper way to do it is to run to Jesus, to meet with Jesus, accept his forgiveness, and then try. Take a moment, remember why you love this person, and then you can decide how you want to respond. And that takes us to the win for this week. The win is what we do with this. And what I encourage you and all of us to do is that when you feel upset, remember to try. That is, when you don't get your way, remember to try. Take a moment. Remember why you love this person, and then why you can decide how you want to respond. Will you pray with me? God, we come before you, and we just ask that for every person watching this, that we would be a beacon of light for relationships, that we would be the example to others, that when people see the way that we treat those that we love, the way that we treat them, God, that others would respond. There must be a God in the universe, that other people would see the way that we treat one another, and they would be drawn to you. We can't do this in our own strength, so we ask that you would do immeasurably more than what we could ask or imagine. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.